We review the Huntsville Ham Fest. Gordo talks microwaves. Valerie talks youth in South Africa. The news from Amateur Radio Newsline, the solar update from Dr. T and Amanda with a chat room, and a whole lot more, all next on Ham Nation.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/hamnation. By ICOM. For more information, visit icomamerica.com/hamnation. And by FreshBooks, the ridiculously easy-to-use cloud accounting software helping small business owners thrive. Try it free for 30 days at freshbooks.com/hamnation.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 364 for August 22nd, 2018. We wrap up the Huntsville Ham Fest.
Hello, everybody. We're back home. This is Bob Heil, K9EID, and many of us have been gone this week, but boy, we had fun in Huntsville, and we're going to talk about that. Got a couple videos. Gordo's got some stuff. What do you got going for us, Gordo, out there in beautiful California?
Well, luckily, our fires are subsiding thanks to the hard work by fire personnel up and down the state of California. On the East Coast, this Sunday is the Western Connecticut Ham Fest in Western Connecticut. So we hope if you're doing that, you'll have a great time. And I know you, Bob, are doing a ham fest in Joplin, right?
Right. Right on good old Route 66. And that's coming up in a few weeks. We'll be talking about it. George, it was good to see you at good old Huntsville. You made it back home okay, and boy, did we have fun.
We did have fun, Bob. But yeah, made it back okay. It was really great to be able to hang out a little bit and do some of the stuff we do there every year, and I'm glad you were there with us this year. And we got on the big short wave there and did a little broadcasting Saturday night. The whole thing's just always a great event.
Yeah, it was great. And Don, I know you really love that because of the Young Ham of the Year. But we had an exceptional time this year. What do you think?
We did. And, of course, the Young Ham of the Year is always a highlight for me. But the special highlight for me this year was getting to hang out with you. And I got to pick out a new toy, so I've been enjoying this thing, too, so since I've been home. Been a lot of fun. We're going to have Dr. Tamitha Scove on to talk about solar weather and some other things, and also with Hurricane Lane bearing down on the Hawaiian Islands, ham radio is going to be leaned on pretty heavy over there, and propagation could affect that, so we'll hear more from Dr. T coming up.
Okay, well, I won't be here long. I got to get out of here and pack the car to head to Joplin, but I did a couple of videos, and I hope you enjoy them. It's going to be a fast-paced look at what we did at Huntsville. Roll them, Vic. We all had fun here. There's just no other way to say it. Don and I, George, we had a lot of fun. And there's Carol Perry with the CQ editor. And look at that. One of the big chat room guys, K9ID, but you guys in the chat room, find out what that means. He had a special badge on. I don't know quite what it is. And there was Mark Brown. Boy, did he do a good job. It was great. And then the Lee family. Everybody knows the Lee family, all the kids. And one of my great friends from Carbondale, Illinois, was there, Cliff, K9JTS. Yep, ICOM was there, well represented. Ray and Will. MFJ always has a big present. Yesu had a very nice booth. Kenwood did too, and I missed them, darn it, in my camera. I don't know what happened there. But I was there and introduced the new parametric receive audio system, and it was well received. All kinds of beautiful receivers, 75A2, 51J3, KWM2A. just crazy stuff. And there's Roger. That's one of Gordo's best friends and his lights from Wired Communications. You want LEDs, he's got them. Look at this. He also does a lot of restored audio gear. Remember that? Oh, yeah. And Roger and I were snooping around and found this commercial stereo amp with a pair of EL34s. Gordo, we've found your light bulb, a 2,000-watt bulb. That's great for your dummy load. Then there was this guy with meters, lots of meters. There was another one, lots of scopes, beautiful station, and R820 receiver and transmitter, all the other stuff. All of it was covered great by Ted Randall and his family on WTWW. So I do hope that you got to see or hear a lot of us because they transmitted all through it as they usually do. Now, there was a very interesting thing that happened on Saturday night, and I thought we better tell you about it. I've never had this happen before, but look what and listen what happened to the hotel. Let's bring up the next little video. And this is the Embassy Suites Hotel. You're all there.
Everybody goes back, sits in the lobby, and talks about what they bought, what they wish they would have bought, and who they saw. Good fun times. But this year, all of a sudden, all of the power was lost in the hotel. All the rooms, the lobby. But you remember these two guys? Here's Chris, KD8YVJ. Don calls him Cincinnati Short Rib. He's not very short anymore. This was taken a couple years ago. And then our new ham of the year, young ham of the year, KG5HVO Bryant. These two guys knew that the North American QSO party was going on. So what did they do?
Yeah, the state is New York, November Yankee.
They found a dark corner.
November Yankee, New York, QSO. Thank you, QRZ.
Hooked up to somebody's remote in New York.
A QRZ, Kilo Golf 5, Hotel Victor Oscar.
Yes, ham radio ingenuity.
They didn't let power outage suffer. They got their laptops going, and who cares? Just amazing, as I said at the end. It was just the ingenuity of those young guys, and we really had fun sitting there and watching them work. They went through about 80 or 90 contacts when I left them, and I'm sure they were going further. But how much fun is all of that? And so if you get a chance to go to Huntsville next year, I think you'll agree with me, Don and George, anybody that was there. It's always a very nice, fun, had a lot of social in that ham fest. So we thank all of the club members that put it together, and especially Mark Brown. That was quite something, so we appreciate all that. So on we move, and let's see what else is going on. So I'm going to slide out of here and take it away.
What caused the power outage, by the way, a squirrel got into the transformer behind the hotel. They had it fixed in about an hour or so it wasn't a big deal. But let's talk about, not about squirrels, let's talk about, I don't know, maybe finding a nice place out in the country with a lot of trees so you can have your own squirrels. And you're going to need a mortgage about that. That's what you're going to need. Right there is a mortgage. So let's talk about buying a home for a minute. Because of rising interest rates, there's a lot of unpredictability when it comes to buying a home these days. And it causes a lot of anxiety with folks. Well, the friends at Quicken Loans are doing something about that. They're calling it the power buying process. And it's pretty simple. Quicken Loans will verify your income, assets, and credit in less than 24 hours to give you a verified approval. Now, what that verified approval does, it gives you the strength of a cash buyer. And once you're verified, you qualify for the all-new exclusive Rate Shield approval. First thing they'll do is lock up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. Now, here's the best part. If the rates go up, your rates stay the same. But if the rates go down, your rate also goes down. So either way, you win. It's the kind of thinking you would expect from America's largest mortgage lender, right? To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/hamnation. Rate Shield approval is only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. NMLS consumeraccess.org number 3030. RocketMortgage.com/HamNation. And we do thank Rocket Mortgage for being a part of what we do here on Ham Nation. Let's jump over to George. No squirrels over there. Nuts, maybe, but no squirrels.
Squirrels too, Don. I've got a video tonight. You know, I met with a lot of people at Huntsville. I see same folks every year, plus a lot of new folks as well. And one of my friends here is someone that you introduced to me, Don. I don't hold that against him, though. It's Joe Eisenberg.
Oh, yeah.
We sat down. Yeah. We had a good little chat and talked about what he's been up to and what some of his favorite kits were. So let's take a quick look at that. And our good friend Joe Eisenberg here, KZNEB. Joe, how has Huntsville been this year?
Well, absolutely wonderful. This weekend has been kind of eventful. I heard of a new kit by Hunt Summers that will be an SDR-based all-band HF 10-watt all-mode SDR transceiver kit that will sell for roughly $150, including the built-in sound card and stuff for the FT8 and things like that. And it'll be a kit for under $150, including the case. And it's just like, this is crazy. But this is where the technology is going, and kits are actually getting lower in cost and a lot better in function.
So what do you find these days? I know there's certainly got to be a lot more surface mount stuff than there was a few years ago. Are these boards coming pre-populated with the surface mount more often now, or what's the deal there?
Well, there are some kits that do come with the surface mount pre-mounted, but this kit that I just described to you, believe it or not, for an SDR, is all through-hole components.
Really?
And just amazing. So it does have a few toroids, obviously, to wind, because you're dealing with bandpass filtering and so forth as required by FCC rules. So for each different band, we're going to have different filters that one switches in. But there are sometimes some surface mount modules within kits, like the 4-State Hilltopper 20 kit has a little tiny module about that big. It's about an inch and a half, and it is the DDS, the direct digital synthesizer, and it has very micro size surface mount components, but you still have to solder that through, and they have a procedure that you use to solder that onto the main board. So you don't have to solder the components, but you have to solder that module onto the board. The Hilltopper 20 is a 20 meter 5 watt CW transceiver put out by the 4-State QRP group.
So out of all the kits you've built in the past year, and I hate to put you on the spot, but what would be one of your favorites?
Well, there's a couple of them. I think the Hilltopper, which I just completed, is a wonderful one because it lets you listen to the entire 20-meter band on sideband and CW. And when you tap the button on the tuning knob, it tells you the frequency in CW in your earpiece. And because it's synthesized, it's very, very stable. And it has a memory keyer in it, an iambic keyer. It's based on an Arduino-type chip, so the firmware updates are free from 4-State QRP. You just have to have an Uno that you can use to program the chip. But it's one of my favorites because it packs a lot in for the money. And the case is all printed circuit board material that comes with it. So you just, yeah, all you do is you break it apart, you take your emery board and sand the edges of it, makes it nice and smooth. And it takes like two swipes to make it glass smooth. And then you'll solder these little corners on it, and it makes a double shielded, very strong case.
Yeah, I have actually done that before, and it is pretty neat. Now, if you're just using raw copper clad to do that with, remember that it's going to turn green after a while, so you might want to put a little lacquer or something on it. Now, this one, I assume, is a coated board.
Yeah, this is a regular coated board. This is already etched and drilled and plated through and everything so that the knobs that screw onto it and so forth attach and so forth. But the cool thing about this is it's already printed and everything. So you don't have to put any labels on it or anything, and it makes a very strong little case. And it's about that big. It's about like 4 or 5 inches square.
All right, so that was your first choice. You said there might have been two that...
Well, there's another one called the Mirania. And the Mirania is a AM broadcast receiver based on the old boys radios that came from the early 1960s. Now, we're going to talk about tariffs. I don't want to get political. But back in the early 60s, to protect the transistor radio manufacturers in this country, our government put a tariff based on the number of transistors in the radio. And so back then, anything 2 transistors or less was considered a toy. So the Japanese came up with this idea that we could make a TRF reflexive regenerative receiver using 2 transistors. And that's basically the circuit in this, but the second transistor is actually an IC, but it still looks like a transistor, but it puts out a lot more audio. So you get a little more audio amplification, but it looks like a transistor. And it has an audio transformer and everything and a nice speaker, and it sounds good. It has actually has really good sound. Obviously, it's not going to be as selective as a super het type receiver, but the reason these were called boys radios is because in magazines like Boys Life, they would advertise these things for $3 or $6, where a normal pocket radio was $20-$30, which would have been a couple $100s in today's money. So a boy could afford, if he had a paper route easily, he could afford one of these boys radios, and this is a kit version of that. The only problems we've had with this kit is that some of the people object to the programming that they hear on it because it's all sports or political talk shows that they really don't want their kids listening to. So they've been asking for a simple FM kit, and I steer them towards some of those.
Yeah. Well, I know you make a lot of Hamfest every year doing presentations and meeting folks there and talking about kits, building, and such. Where are you off to next?
Where am I off to next? I'm going home to Lincoln, Nebraska.
Well, no, I mean next Hamfest. I realize that, yeah.
No, just giving you a hard time. The next Hamfest is a local one in Springfield, Nebraska. It's called the Fliesta, and it's done by the Exarban Amateur Radio Club of Omaha. It's a nice little group. There'll probably be about 150 people there, and it's obviously going to be different than coming here to the third largest Hamfest in the country. Because there, everybody knows me. I live there and so on. I'm no longer a celebrity or something. I'm just Joe. Oh, it's just Joe over there. And it's a lot of fun just to be me at a local ham fest. In terms of traveling for a bigger one, I don't really have a lot of plans this fall except for local and regional ones that are not much farther than Kansas City or that far. In the fall, they kind of disappear for me, and but in the wintertime, it's going to pick up. I think I'm going to do Fort Myers, Florida in January. I'm taking advantage of the fact that my brother lives in Cape Coral,
okay.
So he's right there. And I just talked to one of the board members of the Fort Myers Club in the other aisle here in the flea market saying, oh, they're really excited to have me down there, and they love the fact that I come down there during the year at different times because of family now in Cape Coral. And, in fact, the guy there lived in Cape Coral, not far from where my brother lives. The other one will be Orlando in February. We're going to do a seminar. And then we hit kind of the regionals again. Claremore, Oklahoma is on the list. Ozark Con in Branson. That's a must-do. Now, that's not a biggie. You're going to get almost 200 people there, though. And it's really worthwhile going. And Branson is the entertainment capital of Missouri, and you can go to shows every night, and we do a group kit build, and we have great seminars during the day and QRP demos. Some of the best homebrew adaptations of kit radios that you've ever seen.
Wow. Well, thanks for taking a few minutes to talk with us today. It's always great to catch up with you. Sometimes we bump into each other at Hamfest and never really get a chance to sit down here recently. Things have been so hectic, but I'm glad we found a peaceful Sunday afternoon here in Huntsville to do a little chatting.
Well, George, thank you very much, and thank you for all you do for Ham Nation and for Amateur Logic TV and your Ham College. Those are great and wonderful series, and I'm glad to be a help if you ever need.
All right, Joe. Thanks, man. Have a safe trip.
You bet. You too.
And I want to thank Joe for sitting down and doing that with us. It's always great to spend a little time visiting with him. I think he did maybe two forums this year in Huntsville. But he's always building things and learning new and better ways to do it and sharing it with everyone through CQ Magazine there. And, you know, whenever we have him on here or wherever he goes, Hamfest all over the U.S. So, Joe, thanks for what you do there. You know, last week I asked a question that came out of Gordo's Extra Class Amateur Radio Study Guide here. And it was, how does the beam width of an antenna vary as the gain is increased? It increases geometrically. It increases arithmetically. It's essentially unchanged or it decreases. Well, I have not drawn a winner on this. For some reason, I forgot to do it. So as soon as I get off of here, I'm going to pick out a winner, and we'll be sending them their choice of either, I believe Gordo has a general and the extra class there to give away right now. So we'll be sending them one or the other of that. And we'll see how many people got that one right. I think that's you should probably have got that one right. For next week, though, I'm going to ask one that's kind of related to what we all just did this past weekend, visit the Great Huntsville Ham Fest. And, you know, everybody's got their favorite Ham Fest. Certainly, Huntsville is in my top ones, right near the top of the list there. If it's probably a tie between Hamvention and Huntsville. It's hard for me to say. Both of them have got their own pluses. And, you know, if you can make them, either one of those is great to go to. But I want to know, what's your favorite Ham Fest? Is there one that I'm missing here? I'm sure there are a lot that I'm missing. What is your favorite Ham Fest? Just send it to me in an email. That's hamnationcontest@gmail.com. And there's no wrong answer. We'll pick out one randomly and talk about it next week. You're going to win an MFJ 148 RC 24-hour radio-controlled clock. Now, this is set through WWV, which we've heard a lot of stories about here in the last week or so. I don't know. You know, we'll have to see how they go. But anyway, you can set this clock automatically or manually, so it's going to be good whether WWV is there or not. It's got a 10-minute ID timer built in it. It's a dual clock, so one side you can set for UTC. The other clock you can set for your local time zone there. As long as we got WWV on the air there, it automatically sets itself. Great clock for your ham shack. It's got everything you need in it. MFJ 148 RC. Tell me, what is your favorite ham fest? We'll be back in just a moment. And I'm going to tell you about something else you could win here. But first, let's get a message from ICOM.
Heard it, worked it, logged it. It's time to get the transceiver that's best suited for your lifestyle. ICOM offers a variety of high-performance and innovative products. See how you can make the most out of contest season with these transceivers. The competitive edge you've been looking for, raise the bar and hear what others cannot with this flagship HF 50 MHz transceiver, the IC7851. Reciprocal mixing dynamic range, crystal clear local oscillator design, spectrum scope, dual receivers, and digital voice recorder. The IC7610 is the SDR every ham wants and just in time for contesting season. This high-performance SDR has the ability to pick out the faintest signals, even in the presence of stronger adjacent signals. The new ICOM IC7610 is a direct sampling, software-defined radio that will change the world's definition of a SDR transceiver. RF direct sampling, 110 RMDR, independent dual receiver, dual digicell. IC7300 is changing the way entry-level HF is designed. This high-performance, innovative HF transceiver with a compact design will far exceed your expectations. RF direct sampling, 15 discrete bandpass filters, large 4.3-inch color touchscreen, real-time spectrum scope, and SD memory card slot. Visit ICOMAmerica.com/amateur for more information on all the great ICOM radios.
And you can tune in and enter to win after each episode of Ham Nation. Go to ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation. Register to win some great swag prizes like T-shirts and hats. And while you're there, learn how you can win the monthly grand prize drawing for a new radio. And for August, it's going to be the ICOM ID51A+2 VHF, UHF, dual band, dual watch, D-Star portable with built-in GPS, extended D-Star coverage, terminal mode, access point mode, DV fast data mode. It has DV and FM repeater search function, and there's a downloadable RSMS 1A free Android app available. So go to ICOMAmerica.com/amateur after this and each episode of Ham Nation and register to win. Sign up, good luck, and don't forget to follow ICOM America Inc. on Facebook and Twitter. And we were just talking about giving away one of Gordo's books here. He needs to know who to send that to. So I just did a random drawing. I was thinking, surely the first random number I go to here, that person's going to have gotten it right. No, they didn't. So I had to draw two or three here. I'm surprised that we had that many missed here. But I've got a winner, and the winner is John Hyatt KC7DRI. Has the bandwidth of an antenna. As the antenna varies... Let me read that again. How does the bandwidth of an antenna vary as the gain is increased? The answer is it decreases. And John knew the answer to that, and he's going to win one of Gordo's books here. John Gordo will be right in touch with you and get you fixed right up there. Now, I mentioned last week, and I'm going to mention again this week, you know, that's not the only ICOM radio that's being given away right here soon. That ID51A+2, you do want to go and register for that at ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation. But you want to go register for this one right here, AmateurLogic.tv/contest. Get all the details there. We're giving away an IC7300 base station, that great ICOM SDR that came out in the last couple of years here that's really been... Well, the best entry-level radio currently on the market and probably almost ever. We've got other things to go with that. You're going to need an antenna, so I've got the MFJ2286 Big Ear antenna. You're going to need, you're not going to need a mic because it comes with it, but if you can get a better mic, well, why wouldn't you? We've got the Howl Sound, the ICM right here. Great mic from Howl Sound. It has the electric element in it. It's specially designed for earlier ICOM rigs that need a little extra gain. Also, we've got something else here. This is Bob's new set of headphones right here, the BM17. This is an emergency communicator set. They're covered like in civil defense yellow there. So you won't miss these. They'll be easy to find in the dark. This is the dual ear model here, although there is a single ear model as too. There's... a couple of different elements that they put with it. This one has the electrode element for ICOM rigs, and it comes with a connector for ICOM radio already on it. But there's also a dynamic element available for the headset as well. The Howl BM17, a great new set of headphones, very lightweight too, from Howl Sound. Also, you're going to need a power supply. So we've got an MFJ4230 DMP here. It's the new small switching power supply from MFJ. It's just like the 2430 they've had, except this one has the voltage and current readouts right on the front there. Got some coax, 50 foot of RG8X, U.S. manufactured here from MFJ. And I've got a study guide. You know, you don't have to be particularly, well, you just got to be an amateur. You can be a technician, and you wouldn't really get much advantage out of this radio. Or you could be a general, and you might want to upgrade and get a little more. So we're going to give away one of Gordo's books here as well. Gordo's going to hook you up with either a general or an extra class guide here. Your choice, so you can get upgraded. Or if you're already an extra, well, then just take your pick there and give it to one of your buddies there you want to help get into the hobby. So go learn more about that package, amateurlogic.tv/contest. Thanks to ICOM, MFJ, Howl Sound, and Gordon West Radio Schools for making that possible. And now, speaking of Gordon West, Gordo, I'm giving away your books. I don't know how close of attention you were paying there, but I'm going to give them away anyway. What's going on tonight?
You go right ahead, George. More where those books came from, thanks to the W5YI group out of Texas. Well, tonight we're going to talk about DXing. And as you know, this past weekend was the big DX contest, but not necessarily DXing as you would normally think. So, Victor, if we may, let's go to that first shot. When you think of DXing, you think of working all over the country, all over the world. Yes, here is a true dedicated DXer station, and wow, one of everything. And look at that. One of the radios is likely tuned in to WWV just to let us know that our radios are working and that our directional beam. And you're correct, George. The more gain you squeak out of a beam, the radiation pattern changes significantly, not quite as sharp. But we'll talk about that later. As everybody knows, WWV and WWVH in Hawaii, and we're tuned in right now to the Maritime Net covering the Hawaiian Islands and the incoming hurricane. WWV may lose funding next year, so we encourage all of you, when you see the petition come through on the internet, it's real simple to sign it, and let's keep WWV on the air, because as worldwide DXers, we need it for propagation study. Well, let's now go higher than the worldwide bands and go to 10 gigahertz and higher. This past weekend was a 10 gigahertz contest, and let me tell you, while we weren't working the world, we did have a great signal that went hundreds of miles. First of all, no one makes a rig already set to go with 10 gigs built in. Rather, we use a device called a transverter that will take signals at 10,368 and bring them down to either the 440 band for sideband and CW, or down to 2 meters, or even down to 28 megahertz. And that's what I use at QuartzFest when we're using the ICOM 9100. But the 10 gigahertz contest depends on hams putting together a project called a transverter to take the 10,000 megahertz band and even 24 and even higher down to their local frequency radio, such as a 2 meter single sideband radio or a 432 sideband. That's the job of the transverter. The transverters come out of Europe, and I'm happy to say you're not having to do board level soldering. In fact, it's much like plumbing. You will need some additional devices to get them humming, but the transverter is something that should be in your vocabulary, and we'll give you some websites to go to learn more about it. Well, every year, the San Diego and the San Bernardino Microwave Society groups out here and Microwave Society groups throughout all of the United States and likely Europe come together to test their equipment out. And the way we test it, and there's Pat, N6RMJ, who holds the 440 record for meteor scatter. Pat just came out with a wonderful paper about bouncing signals at 10,000 megahertz. Because remember, at 10 gigs, the signals, much like radar, are radar, and they do take a bounce. But during our preset for getting ready. Brian, AF6NA with the San Bernardino Microwave Society and a host of other very microwave knowledgeable hams, have a course laid out here where we can test both transmitter as well as receiver. Now, some folks run their equipment on 110 and bring along a little gas generator and run out of gas. Well, we won't talk about that, Brian, but I choose to run the gear off of 12 volts. And all of the transverters work off of 12 volts. And I use the BioNO batteries because they have all sorts of different batteries for how long I'm going to be out there. For the one day, I was landlocked. So we used the intermediate size, about a 20 amp hour battery. But the next day, heading down to the water, we wanted to make sure we didn't run out of juice out on the water. So we went for the larger ones. Now, some of the transverters are built into wonderfully engineered little boxes, and a small antenna like that is going to do a good job of working out at least 100 miles on 10 gigahertz, sometimes further. This is my setup. It's called the Cassegrain feed, and I probably lose about 2 dB, says Brian, because I'm bouncing the signal off of the outside of the big dish to the focal point that then goes into a transition. Yeah, a lot of stuff happening, and you don't want to lose a single dB at 10,000 megahertz. Here's a prime feed, and wow, look at that. I don't know if polishing the dish makes a difference, but it certainly makes it look very impressive. Now, having your dish level is extremely important. If you're 2 degrees high or 2 degrees low, you're going to lose about 3 to 6 dB of signal. Well, everybody has their great way of measuring, are they absolutely level? But because we're out on a boat, we'll use a string and a weight. And once I see it tapping the bottom there, I know that I'm plumbed and ready to work. The transverter outputs to an SMA connector, and if you're fortunate to have the radio right off the end of the parabolic antenna, it's a direct connection. But in many cases, we'll use flexible waveguide, and this flexible waveguide has very little loss, and it takes the signal from the dish and takes it from the right-hand side up and down and over to my transverter and the local rig. Here's another popular feed, and this one is clean as a whistle with the electronics mounted right behind the antenna. And folks, there is no way you're going to get a bigger, stronger signal with a small antenna. And you can do amazing things with a big antenna, as long as the wind is not blowing. No, the wind's not blowing here. He's putting it up here. But this is an antenna size that's going to work 400 to 600 kilometers on the 10,368 megahertz X-band. And it's going to work sideband as well as CW with just crystal clear quality if band conditions are okay. So while we sort of laugh that he's got a big mama antenna, let me tell you, this thing is going to blaze a path to the distant station. When we set up, we always want to make sure that visitors that are always drawn to this event are welcomed. They're told all about ham radio, and I have an older brochure that I give out from the league that says, here's what we're doing on ham radio. But caution them, don't stand in front of the dish because it's hazardous to them. And it's going to cut down on your range. The human body is a great absorber of RF waves. So we get all the stations testing a couple weeks before the contest. They get all lined up on the antenna. And this is the downrange antenna that Brian and his team have set up. It is both measuring transmit capabilities of our system and then calculating how much power and so on ahead of time, and gives a standing as to how well you're doing for the antenna and the equipment of your size. And then it also goes out on receive. And on receive, one station at the transmitter end says, okay, here comes the steady carrier from this operator. And there's Brian. He's looking at it. And they do that on the 440 band FM. And some modest equipment here, probably, I don't know, $20,000, $30,000. But those in the microwave industry have access two great pieces of equipment. And then the San Bernardino Microwave Society for this tune-out goes ahead and does all the computations, and there's offset dishes and prime dishes. There's software-defined receivers and so on. And you can see how well you did or sort of did. So then on that morning, on last Saturday morning, everybody goes to a high spot. And what we first tune in to make sure that our radio is working is not WWV at 10,000 megs. Nope, they're at 10 megs, not 10,000. But we tune in to distant beacon stations. And beacon stations are put up by hams, part of microwave groups, and they're continuously on the air for both calibrating your equipment and just making sure that your receiver is indeed receiving. To operate at these high sites, you want to be cautious that sometimes they have a lot of VHF equipment that gets into your local radio. That's not good. So I like to operate a little further away. Now, we had great conditions. As you can see here, a lot of this was the last contest. We had dry air between the Bay Area and Southern Cal, as well as out to Arizona and Nevada. And dry air is just what we need. So I jump in the dune buggy, head for the signal peak. And before I set up, I like to have a little fun with motorists that live in the exclusive high-rent neighborhood. They come screaming down, and it's fun to hear them hit the brakes when they when they see what's going on. But when we get to our operating spot, there's Robert, a relatively new ham, but an old-timer when it comes to microwave in the distance. And there's Brian getting his setup. And as you can see, he's got flexible waveguide from his feed horn offset. And he was hearing stations and I believe working stations the next day all the way out in Arizona, 400 to 600 kilometers away. So, wow. And new hams, I love to see the smile on their face when they make their first contact on 10 meters X-band. And, of course, we all keep our logs as nice and neat as Brian did here, and that lets us take part. Well, I wanted to go out to the water. So 10 gigs, believe it or not, is quite reflective off of seawater. And there were folks that were making contacts from down here all the way to the Central Valley.
So you're up in the Central Valley? Roger. For Kettleman, we heard you really well there. Put a carrier up on 160. Okay, give me a minute to aim it, and then we'll...
So what the microwavers do is they coordinate through a local UHF repeater system. I was using the ID51 for local coordination. And they'll set a frequency on 10 gigs that no one else is using, and they'll set directions to and from the stations, and they're talking 2, 3, and 400 miles away, running a whopping 2 or 3 watts of power. I didn't have quite that much power nor success in working the Bay Area, but for Maritime Mobile, it's a great way to give out contact points. You have to separate yourself every 10 miles before you can repeat a call back to a station that is stationary. But out on the water, as you can see, a few years ago, we took quite a trip and we worked a ton of stations. So above us there is radar. Above the dish, you see that white dome? That's radar. Your microwave oven is on a lower frequency. The radar's on a lower frequency than what we're operating here with a dish antenna. So I'm very happy to say that working DX via microwaves is fun. Now, the premier for Southern California, yet covers all over the country, microwave organization, you can read all about it at ham-radio/SBMS, San Bernardino Microwave Society, hamradio.com/SBMS. Don't forget the .com. Now, for equipment, just to look and see what's available, Kuhne, K-U-H-N-E, as well as DB6NT, popular pieces of equipment as transverters. Another group that I hear regularly from is the Badger Contesters. They do a fabulous job, much like the San Bernardino Microwave Society or the San Diego Microwave Group. So I encourage all of you that if you're wanting to try something new, even as a technician class operator, you have full privileges up on X-Band, you ought to think about it. But you need to join a microwave group to learn more about its capabilities and how to wire in these transverters so that you don't accidentally blow up your own receiver with the transmit. So there is a little bit of plumbing that you need to do. Probably it's going to be a $1,000 deal when you get through with all of the equipment, including your local radio, but you're going to have a great time playing radio. And you might even tune in the amateur television network, because when the Microwave Society in San Bernardino has its monthly meetings, it's televised, thanks to Gary, over Ham TV. So lots of stuff happening up on the microwave, and I hope you'll take advantage of all the great gear that comes out of Europe called transverters. But look up those two sites, KUHNE and DB6NT, and take a look and see what's happening up on X-Band. So, Don, let's go over to you, because we've tuned in on the ICOM 9100, the Hawaiian Maritime Mobile Pacific Seafarers Net, and we're going to be hearing George and others taking traffic out of Hawaii. So, Don, what's the weather?
Well, I can tell you what Dr. T can tell you, the solar weather, but, you know, we have Hurricane Lane bearing down. It's a Category 5, I believe, right now, bearing down on the major islands of Hawaii. And KHON Television Channel 2 in Honolulu announced earlier tonight that the Hawaii Emergency Management will be leaning heavily and relying extensively on amateur radio operators over there. So we wish all of them the best, that's for sure. And we'll have a full after-action report on that on Amateur Radio Newsline when all that settles out. Right now, let's go ahead and get to the news of this week right now on Amateur Radio Newsline. From Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 2129, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, August 22nd, 2018. The NASA Parker Solar Probe successfully launched on a Delta IV Heavy rocket from Florida's Cape Canaveral, August 12, 2018. We welcome now Newsline science editor Dr. Tamitha Scove, WX6SWW.
The probe was named after one of the founding fathers of space weather science, Dr. Eugene Parker, who at a young 91 years old was in attendance. Dubbed the Mission to Touch the Sun, the Parker Solar Probe is viewed by many scientists as a miracle mission. It will be the closest we have ever come to the sun at 3.8 million miles. It will fly the fastest we have ever gone at 430,000 miles an hour. It will survive temperatures 3 million degrees Fahrenheit, the hottest environment we have ever known. Indeed, the corona is hot, even 300 times hotter than the surface of the sun. Data from this region is critical to advancing models of the solar corona and the solar wind, and it will extend scientists' ability to predict the intensity of space weather. The probe's first close pass of the sun will be in November 2018, with 23 ever closer passes over the next 7 years. When the probe finally runs out of fuel some 10 to 20 years in the future, it will fall into the sun and burn up, all except for the carbon-based heat shield. Long after the probe is gone, that carbon disk will continue orbiting the sun for many generations to come. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Dr. Tamitha Scove, WX6SWW.
In just a few short months, something else will be headed into space: packet radio for the International Space Station.
It looks like APRS and packet radio will be back on board the International Space Station sooner rather than later. NASA has given the go-ahead for the launch of a new packet module to replace the one that died on board the space station in July last year. The module has been outfitted with a new battery and given sufficient testing to verify that it's operational. A request has been made to send it up as part of the Manifest for Supply Mission 71B, which could be sent as early as the 31st of October, with a projected docking on November the 2nd. Meanwhile, the ARIS hardware team have been working on the new interoperable radio system, which it now hopes can be deployed in early 2019. As for the packet module, the crew will make an attempt to get that installed as time permits. ARIS reports that it's expected to be operational again by late November. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Robert Broomhead, VK3DN.
If you keep your 2-meter rig handy, this low-key special event is for you.
At 7 p.m. local time on the 26th of August, turn on your radio and listen to the sound of 2-meter FM Simplex. Then key the mic. It's that simple. And that's what Joseph Durnell, NE3R, is hoping hams will do to mark an event he's calling Light Up 2 Meters Night. It's an activity that he's reviving after years of dormancy. He told Amateur Radio Newsline he discovered the event 14 or so years ago when it was promoted by a now defunct Yahoo group. Joseph told us, quote, "There are no points or awards, just the satisfaction that the QSO was something you made happen on your own," end quote. Weather permitting, he'll be out there operating mobile on a hilltop with a small Yagi on a mast outside his car. But whether you use a handheld to have some rag shoes or you go portable and try it in combination with Summits on the Air, Joseph says, light up the night. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jim Dameron, NATMW.
Listen for a full report on our Young Ham of the Year presentation from the just-concluded Huntsville Hamfest in next week's report. And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for four decades and counting at arnewsline.org. With Dr. Tamitha Scove, WX6SWW, Robert Broomhead, VK3DN, Jim Dameron, N8TMW, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe, I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW. 7-3, we'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. Now, with the solar update, here's more from Dr. Tamitha Scove, WX6SWW.
We've got two sunspots, a solar flare, and two solar storms. Looks like our solar minimum sun is on a roll. Those stories and more in the Shorty this week. Just when we thought things were going to start quieting down, our sleepy sun keeps it interesting. We now have two bright regions on the Earth-facing sun right now. Region 2718 just crossed central part of the sun and fires off a solar flare. It also launches a solar storm. Now, this solar storm is going to go south of us, so we don't think it's quite Earth-directed, but we might see a little something. But what's more is that it actually destabilizes this big filament here that then lifts off in two different parts, and part of it is definitely Earth-directed. Now, NASA did a prediction model run, and it looks like this solar storm is going to be hitting Earth around midday on the 25th. So we definitely have that to look forward to. It's probably going to be a little bit of a weak storm, but it might actually bring aurora to high latitudes. Now, you amateur radio operators, you may not like the news about the solar storm, but at least we do have region 2719, and between these two bright regions, they are actually boosting the solar flux up just a little bit. We're still hovering at poor, but it's at the top end of poor, which I guess is good for solar minimum. And looks like this is going to continue probably for the next 3 or 4 days. And then we have yet another bright region on the backside. Switching to your solar storm conditions and aurora possibilities over the coming week, we are anticipating the hit from that solar storm that's Earth-directed. Now, this one's going to be a little bit complicated to predict. We're not expecting a super strong storm, but remember, there are two of them. There's one that went south of us, and then there's the one that's coming that's Earth-directed. So at high latitudes, NOAA is expecting active conditions, but they're giving us about a 45% chance of a major storm. Now, at mid-latitudes, we're only expecting unsettled conditions, but we do have about a 15% chance of a minor storm. So you can see the spread's quite big. And that's what happens sometimes when you get these really complicated events. They're just really hard to predict. Now, we also might begin to see the storming, maybe even starting around late on the 24th. And then we'll see something through the 25th and possibly even through the 26th. So this may linger for a little while, which, even though we expect it to be weak, might mean it could be an aurora producer. Switching to your solar flare and particle radiation storm outlook over the coming week, we do have two bright regions on the Earth-facing disk right now. Region 2718 fired off that solar flare and launched a solar storm, and then it kind of died, so it's no longer numbered. Now, region 2719 is still alive and kicking, and so we're watching it for solar flares to see if it actually will flare up too. But right now, everything is in the green. We don't expect any radio blackouts or any big flares from either of these regions. What is nice is that they both are boosting the solar flux just a little bit. It's still in the poor region for radio propagation, but it's at the top end of poor. It's sure a lot better than what it would be if this were a spotless sun. But, you know, we're just going to have to deal with it. It is solar minimum after all. Now, that also means that for radiation risk, if you happen to be a frequent flyer, you have to know that the cosmic radiation right now is penetrating a little bit more intensely than it would be at other times during the solar cycle. So if you're a frequent flyer who flies about 800 hours annually and you fly at high latitudes and high altitudes, you are at an elevated risk for radiation dose right now, so please take this into consideration in your flight plans. So the space weather this week continues to be exciting, and as far as our sleepy sun is concerned, well, didn't you get the memo? You're supposed to be hibernating. We have a solar storm that's on its way to Earth that should hit us around midday on the 25th, and with the other storm that is preceding it and some of the stuff that's happening afterwards, we might actually see this thing linger long enough to give us some aurora, at least at high latitudes. So you photographers, keep your batteries charged. Now you amateur radio operators, hey, things don't look too bad right now. We've got two bright regions on the Earth-facing disk, and in another day or two, we're going to have yet another one coming in from the backside. So, you know, it's not as bad as a spotless sun, right? And GPS operators, well, as long as you stay away from the Dawn Dust Terminators and away from aurora, your reception should look pretty good. I'm Tamitha Scove. Thank you for watching.
Thank you, Dr. T, and we wish the best for all those folks over in Hawaii. Hopefully they'll have good HF propagation to get to health and welfare traffic in and out. Let's go over to Valerie now and see what she's got going. Hello, Val.
Hi, Don. Looking good.
Good to see you. I'm trying.
So, you know, I wanted to say, Gordo, nice job on those stills tonight. You know, every time I watch you, I see so many things in this hobby that I still need to try. You know, there's so much to this hobby. That's what I love about it. But I know you guys were all talking about Huntsville. Well, just a mere 8,566 miles from Huntsville, Alabama, is Gauteng, South Africa. So what went on in Gauteng, South Africa, you ask? Well, it was the most prestigious event in the IARU Region 1, if you want to show slide number 1. And it was in Region 1, it includes all of Russia, parts of the Middle East, Europe, and Africa. And what went on there is Youngsters on the Air. And this is a traveling event. It moves around to different regions, you know, different countries in Region 1. And if you look at the next slide, they had this year, South Africa was chosen, and South African Radio League hosted this event, this international event. And it was a first for Africa and South Africa, obviously, to host this major event. They had over 80 participants aged 16 to 25. From over 30 countries that were invited to attend. And it was a whole week of fun-filled amateur radio activities that went on from the 8th through the 15th. And throughout the week, the youths were given different opportunities to learn all aspects of this, so many aspects of this hobby. You can't learn it all in 1 week. But they got to do a lot of building and learn about different cultures, nationalities, foster international relationships, goodwill, all that stuff as well. As amateur radio. So I think this next one is a video, a little bit about some of the things that they did at the event.
Outside sensor, you can put this on.
There should be sound.
With maybe some tape. You also need
Break
to connect the connector before putting on the lid. If you do put on the lid, I don't think we should like just fasten it right now. So we can like open it. To the spring, we need to attach this one.
So, Junior, what are you guys doing here?
What we're doing?
Yeah.
We're building a makeup. So now, right now, we are wrapping up the isolation around to make it like able to hold for a fall from 3 meters and also shape test. that will be held in 15 minutes. So we are a bit short in time, but we try our best to make it as good as possible. So we're right now finishing up our last side with tape for the bottom one.
What I'm doing right now is I'm playing Need for Speed on my laptop because I need it to get hot so the battery heats up so that it works. At the moment, it says the battery's at 5%. It was at 90. If I play enough Need for Speed, it's going to heat up. The battery's going to heat up and my laptop will work. And then I can reprogram that, which is what I'm actually trying to do. Yeah.
Actually, I have a birthday. So, just grab the person next to you and let's sing for her happy birthday. One,
happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
This is Team Buffalo's payload. What we've done is we've put the pressure sensor and the thermometers inside this little balloon here. As the air pressure outside gets lower, the balloon is going to inflate. And our pressure sensors and our temperature sensors are going to record those measurements whilst it's inflating. Eventually the balloon's probably going to pop because the air pressure outside will be so low, the balloon will get really big and then it will burst. And when we get back, we'll be able to see all the data from that. What we can then do, by using the ideal gas equation, because we know the pressure and the temperature and we can work out the other constants, we can calculate the volume of the balloon as it goes up into up to 30 kilometers in altitude. Inside this box, we've got six lithium AA batteries. We've got a PIC microcontroller and then a couple more sensors inside there. We can measure the battery voltage, for example. That's all inside a insulated box. Attach the other payloads that are going up in the balloon.
It's Saturday of the Yodo Winter Camp in South Africa, and if you've been watching, there are five payloads for the Baker launch, which is today. We made them all yesterday, and the teams are buffalo, rhino, elephant, lion, and leopard. So basically the big five. And we're all connecting them together now so that they can go onto the balloon and be launched as soon as possible because we only have a 2-hour time limit to launch these and it's already been about an hour, so we need to hurry up. They're going to actually launch.
Hello, I'm Wart, Oscar November 8 Whiskey Romeo from Belgium team and here with the payload for the weather balloon. I'm in Team Rhino. So yeah, we're letting up a balloon, hopefully to get some nice data about the temperature, the barometric pressure. We're curious to find out if it will be freezing inside of the capsule. It will probably be outside, but we're wondering what it will do to the battery, so if it will be freezing inside or not. So yeah, very excited. We will see what it does in a couple of hours.
Ja, they measure already.
10 cases.
11 kilos.
Okay,
ZS6-AE4FH, and this is Alistair, ZS6-RAS. And we're here at Youngsters on the Air in South Africa, and right now the antennas are being put up for the shack. So Alistair, what can you tell us about the antennas?
Okay, well, firstly, we've got a hex beam on top of a portable tower here on the trailer. And then we've also got another extendable tower over there that the Yagi is going to be put up onto. And this is a it's a two element on 15, 10 and 20, and then a dipole on 12 and 17. So those are the two antennas. And then we've got an inverted V for 80 and 40, I believe it is. And so those are the antennas we're going to be running for YOTA.
Hi, Yankee Oscar Tango Alpha calling CQ.
This is Europe
40 SSB. We're doing 20 SSB.
Lima
Yankee 2 Alpha X-ray, thanks for your call, 59.
You have 7
Thank you, 73 QRZ Zulu Sierra 9 Yankee Oscar Tango Alpha calling CQ.
The bit the Americans use, 180 to 200.
Ending Lima, station with Lima.
So, for the guys...
Okay, please again your call sign, please again your call sign. I copy to 5 and 7.
For the guys just tuning in, we're on 14257. Beaming north, using Nikon 7610.
5 Oscar India Lima, please a prefix.
Got an Ameritron amplifier with about 500 watts coming out of it. Worked a couple Belgians already, and I hope to work lots of more of you in the next hour. We are QRV until 5 o'clock. Okay, thank you very much. We will greet Louis and 73 Zulu Sierra 9 Yankee Oscar Tango Alpha QRZ. Florida 4, Victor Papa Lima. Florida 4, Victor Papa Lima, 59. Okay, thank you very much. And 73 to you, Dave. Zulu Sierra 9, Yankee Oscar Tango Alpha, QRZ.
And I think we have a couple more slides to show, too. So a lot of these guys got on the air, did a lot of different things, did a lot of home brewing, everything. So it was really an all kind of an all event, you know, thing for youth to learn all aspects of this hobby. So pretty cool. Now it was organized and sponsored by the South African Radio League Youth Working Group and supported by a dedicated team of volunteers. So not only do you need the volunteers, but you need the sponsors. Oh, if you want to go back one, Vic. The Yasmi Foundation was really instrumental. They provided one of the three radios used, an amp and a hex beam. And I'm sure you saw all those Heil headsets all over the place there. So thanks, Bob Heil, for doing that. And Jerry and I purchased a 7200 and sent that down to South Africa for them as well. So, and then if you go to the next page, if you want to learn more about this, maybe help out and get these guys for the next year's event, you can go learn more on ham-yoda.com. And you know, really, that's for region one. I wish we could put something to get like this together for region two. That would be a cool thing, and maybe I'll start talking to certain people that I know that can make things like this happen, and we'll get a region two event like this going on, because that's pretty cool. So as far as the rest, I have one human interest story I'm going to share real quick before I pass it to Amanda. As some of you know, I went to Hurricane Puerto Rico after Hurricane Maria to help provide emergency communications for that. But just prior to that, my son and I had gone down to Texas for Hurricane Harvey. And while we were down there, there were so many roads closed. You couldn't tell what was open, what was closed. And it was a nightmare to try and figure your way out around there. Just to go 3 miles sometimes could take you 2 hours because you had to go all the way around. Well, one of the Zello channels, which we used a lot, Riley and I, was Zello mapping, or Harvey mapping, it was called. And they had a dispatcher on there, and he was so good at turning chaos into calm. He was very calm, very good, was just a wonderful dispatcher. So I kept bugging him. I'm like, are you a ham radio operator? If you're not, you need to become one. Well, he just sent me an email, and his name's Jared, and he just got his ham license, and it's Kilo India 5 Alpha Uniform Victor. So bravo, Jared. Hopefully you're going to be hooked up with the local Aries group in your area and get on the air, because I know you'll be a huge asset to any Aries team you join. So congratulations on that. So that's all I've got for this week. In a couple weeks, I'm going to be doing a thing on Last Man Standing. As you guys know, that's coming back. And so Amadeo is gracious to send me a whole bunch of cool stuff. So I'll be doing that in 2 weeks. So look forward to that. So over to you, Amanda.
Hey, Valerie, before we get to Amanda and the chat room, let's talk about FreshBooks. This episode of Ham Nation brought to you by FreshBooks. You know, most accounting software is built for accountants and not business owners. Now, Valerie's an accountant. I'm not. I'm guessing you aren't either. And that's why you need FreshBooks. FreshBooks is an owner-first accounting platform that puts you, the small business owner, right back in control of your business. FreshBooks approachable accounting is full industry standard double entry accounting that enables painless automatic bookkeeping and reporting. You can quickly generate and access accounting reports like the general ledger, trial balance, and chart of accounts in the FreshBooks dashboard, and even share those reports with your accountant or financial advisor. Send professional looking invoices in seconds. You can see sent, viewed, paid, and overdue invoices. Nobody wants overdue invoices. Accept online payments directly from your invoice and get paid an average of 2 times faster. Create proposals with rich text content and images. Request your client's e-signature as they accept proposals. Send invoices, estimates, and proposals in multiple languages. FreshBooks even automatically connects you to your bank account and updates expenses daily. You can import expenses in bulk or take a picture of a receipt, upload it, and boom, FreshBooks does the rest. Keep tabs on your business no matter where you are with the FreshBooks mobile app. If you're still conquering the day-to-day tasks of creating invoices and collecting payments, FreshBooks is the magic wand you've been looking for. And if you have great ambitions and need robust accounting, FreshBooks can grow with you. No matter what your accounting needs are, FreshBooks will help put you in the driver's seat. Join the 24 million who have used FreshBooks to painlessly send invoices, track times, and capture expenses, and get back to doing what you love, taking care of your business. Try FreshBooks free for 30 days at FreshBooks.com/HamNation. Enter HamNation in the How Did You Hear About Us section. That's FreshBooks.com/HamNation. And we thank FreshBooks for their support of what we do here on Ham Nation. Amanda, what's going on in the chat room tonight?
Well, thank you. And it's really nice to have Valerie on tonight. People have been missing you, Val. You have no idea. All right. So my first question is actually for you. Matt, KY4GPD, I think you've told us this before, but when did you get your tech and what was your first radio?
Oh, for me. My daughter and I, we got our tech together on a whim. So we went to one of those weekend crams. That was November of 2006. And my first radio was an FT2800 2-meter radio. But my first HF radio was a used 706 Mark IIG, $400.
Woo! All right. And those 706s are, they're hardcore. Everybody loves those. And they're highly sought after. So, all right. The next question, I don't know if any of you guys know this. What are the hurricane net frequencies? Anyone have the answer to that?
Gordo, right now we're hearing some calls. The hurricane net frequency is 14,275 for the USA. But right now, the seafarers net between here and Hawaii and all the vessels in between and beyond is on 14,300. So 14,275 to 14,300 with your beams toward the west. We're hearing traffic now.
Very good. Thank you. And let's remind everyone, stay clear of those frequencies. Listen all you want, but please, let's keep those frequencies clear. Gordo, another question for you. What would be the least expensive way to get into microwave?
The least expensive way is what the San Bernardino Microwave Society, and I'll hold this up for those that may not have audio, SBMS, The least expensive way is to join a group and use their loaner equipment, as you saw Robert doing in the short shots. So it is expensive coming up on microwave, but let me tell you, microwave groups throughout the country, and you can look them up on the American Radio Relay League's page, or go to San Bernardino SBMS website, ham-radio.com/SBMS. They have pages and pages of fellow groups throughout the country. And I know that each of these groups have loaner equipment. How's that for a cheap way to get started?
Loaner equipment is nice. Also, loaner tools are nice. So you can maybe get an antenna analyzer or something to get your antenna situation figured out. So, all right, let's move on. Let's quick reminder, the Boxborough ARRL New England Convention is September 7th, 8th, and 9th. Get your schedules planned for that if you're going to attend. And let's see. Let's go over some net frequencies for tonight. We have the 40-meter net on 7192 tonight and 20-meter net on 14268. We have our digital nets, TAC 311 for DMR, D-Star, we're on 14 Charlie, and the Dewdrop-In for Echolink. So there you have it. Thanks, everyone, for tonight. It's been a wonderful show. Great segment, Val. We really appreciate that. And I loved following the Lees on Facebook. He kept us really updated, and it was really fun to follow Faith Hannah's journey in South Africa. I bet it was quite the experience for her.
Yeah, and go to their website that I said, that ham-yoda.com. They have a lot of videos there, and it's pretty cool stuff.
Definitely.
Yeah, the Lee family was at Huntsville. We had a lot of fun playing around with them. And a lot of kids at Huntsville, a lot of ham kids at Huntsville. Always is, I guess, because we do Young Ham of the Year there. But the Lee family, just the best. And you remember when they shot the little video piece in Dayton where they interviewed Flat Don? We did a follow-up on that, too. So watch their YouTube channel coming up. Follow-up
on
that.
Oh, I got to check that out.
It's going to be kind of funny. All right, Gordo, any final words for us tonight?
73 in Hawaii. Stay safe tonight. We're listening.
There you go. Great stuff from Val and from Amanda. Also from George and from Bob. So we'll go ahead and turn it off for the night. And we'll see you again right back here next Wednesday night for more of Ham Nation. So for everybody out here, I'm Don Wilbanks at E5W73. And we'll see you guys next week here on Twit and Ham Nation. Good night, everybody.